Hello, good morning, and welcome. It's Friday, the 19th of March, 2021, and we're back with episode 186. But hang tight, we'll get started in just a moment with a fantastic guest today. If you're a fan of this podcast, please don't forget to drop me 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, where I'm pretty blown away to say that thanks to those of you who did leave me a 5-star rating and a review, I've been able to maintain basically a solid 5.0 rating for the last 3 years, not to mention keep my number one spot on Google for autonomous cars podcast searches. So really, thank you very much indeed for that. Today's episode is brought to you in part by The Information. Stay tuned, and I'll be giving you 75% off your first month of The Information just for listening to my podcast. So my guest today is Noelle Marshall. She's coming at us from Schaeffler. Schaeffler, of course, is the huge German conglomerate. She's based at their U.S. offices, where she's heavily involved in all of their drive-by-wire, specifically drive-by-steering technologies. And before we get started, I just want to throw out a few links for you to check out, which relate to a lot of what we discuss. One of them is the SAM car project. This is the so they basically kitted out a Corvette race car to allow to enable a quadriplegic race car driver to successfully drive this Corvette race car to the top of the Pikes Peak hill climb. You can learn more at arrow.com/en/5yearsout/stories/sam-car. You could probably just go to arrow.com and navigate there yourself. Also discussed during this podcast is all the work that Noelle and her team have been doing with the Indy Autonomous Challenge. So if you're familiar with IndyCar Racing League, there is a kind of feeder level league called IndyCar Lights. To use a Formula One analogy, this would be rather akin to Formula Two, for instance. And well, the IndyCar Lights feeder series is doing a competitive autonomous vehicle league as well. It's not technically a full league yet. This is really just a competition for the moment. And in any event, Noelle and her team at Schaeffler are handling the hardware components for the drive-by-wire system for those autonomous vehicles. So really incredible stuff. You can learn more at IndyAutonomousChallenge.com. And finally, with respect to the US DOT Inclusive Design Challenge, you can learn more about that at transportation.gov/accessibility/inclusive-design. Right, let's get started and dive in. We've got nearly an hour with Noelle Marshall of Schaeffler. Gosh, last time we spoke was, I guess, before the holidays, actually.
Yeah, it was.
And now we're wrapping up Q1 of the next year. Hard to believe.
Amazing. Yeah, time's flying. I actually get to take my first airplane ride since COVID at the end of the month.
Wow.
It's going to be a little weird.
That is going to be a little weird. Short flight, long flight?
Headed out to Maryland. Kind of a long flight. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, at least you're going easterly with the winds, so it'll be a little shorter. Well, at least your outbound flight will be shorter. How about that?
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Well, certainly I'm pretty excited to dive in and sort of learn what you've been up to and how things have changed, or I guess realigned, as it were. I mean, you know, I think what's always interesting is kind of getting a bit of the backstory. So if you felt like kind of resharing some of that with me, I think folks would love to hear that. Connecting the dots that I've got, everything with respect to the drive-by-wire system as a whole, and frankly, that really incredibly inspiring story about the racing driver going up Pikes Peak. This is some incredible stuff. So not really sure where you want to take it from. I mean, there's a lot to cover, so I'm frankly all ears.
Yeah. So certainly, I'm supporting drive-by-wire and steer-by-wire here in the US for Schaeffler. And what's sort of changed or evolved is that now, drive-by-wire actually falls under our e-mobility business unit. So not only is there the drive-by-wire aspect, but there's also other components, like clutches, axle bearings, wheel bearings, e-motors, like think electrified. And there's more, a broader portfolio that I'll now be supporting in the U.S. So that's kind of exciting. So that just started, actually officially start April 1, and I'll get to learn more about, a deeper dive, right? Technically, and also more within Schaeffler, like how to support those products, meet new people. And so I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that sounds super cool. I mean, and just to help kind of understand the scope of everything, I mean, I think a lot of folks, they hear anything by wire and they think it's limited to the prefix. So fly by wire, the flight controls, mm-hmm. drive by wire, or presumably steering and brake. But now you're saying this is more broadly defined to include all the other elements. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. So like, you know, Schaeffler knows that like traditionally, you know, we have the bearings and the clutches and motors, but it's not about that, those individual pieces anymore. It's more of an integrated system. And so that's why they're bringing it all together.
Okay. So just to pick on one component in particular, because this is maybe just more for personal curiosity. So when I think of, say, clutches or transmission components, and then I think of anything even hinting at some sort of automation or something that's different to the more, shall we say, manual mechanism or engagements, one of the examples that comes to mind is semi-automated gearboxes. Is that something in line with what you're talking about?
I would say so. I think Schaeffler does so much, right? And there's still like, I would say stuff I'm not even aware of. But yeah, that falls into the category. And you think about just electrification in general. Yeah, that's where the future is going. And that's where we want to fill that space and that gap. And not, I think it's more like, you know, traditionally these OEMs would go to one person for one component, one person for another. Well, let's change that mentality, right? And maybe you go to one supplier for multiple components. That's a system, you know, level solution. And I think that's smart. Like it just makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. And with respect to, sorry, I keep picking on clutches. I guess I like transmissions. I don't know, but I mean, yeah, with respect to right. Well, so with respect to electrification, though, specifically EVs, obviously, I mean, generally, I think with maybe one exception in the past, I mean, at what stage in the drivetrain would this come into play? Since by definition, most EVs tend to be, well, one gear or effectively no gears.
Right. Well, the beauty of our solutions, and again, I'm focused on drive-by-wire, but in particular right. in that regard, it doesn't matter what the drivetrain is. You're integrating hardware and software that doesn't care how the vehicle operates. It just cares what signals it's getting to do what it's supposed to do, whether steering, gas, or brake. And that's probably not a clear answer, but
no, that actually makes sense. No, I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so stepping back then, the whole kind of package, I mean, and then kind of looping this back then to this, like I say, this really inspiring story. What do you feel like sharing some more details on that, how it worked? Because I just remember being blown away by the fact that you guys basically developed a system which enabled this driver who was essentially paralyzed from the neck down to control a racing car, an Audi, I believe, up Pikes Peak.
It was a Corvette.
Excuse me, Corvette. Right, nice.
So that's a cool project. Let's talk about that. And then I want to kind of pivot to this IndyCar project we're working on too. And I think that might
blow you. I would love to hear about that. Absolutely.
A couple years ago in 2016, with my previous employer, we worked on a project where essentially this is the challenge. How do you get somebody who's a quadriplegic, paralyzed from the shoulders down, to get behind the wheel again and race? And so we're not talking about, you know, just driving around a parking lot. We're talking about performance driving. And that's quite a daunting challenge if it's never been done before, right? Like, how would you even start that? And so with Schaeffler's space drive technology, and we call it space drive, that's our drive-by-wire, that was the core of the solution. So you've got, you know, your actuators at the steering wheel and the gas and the brake pedals, and then you've got our controllers telling those actuators what to do. And then on top of that, right, is your sensors and your software and your algorithms taking input from infrared cameras to see the person's head movement. So they're turning their head left or right. And then also taking that gas and brake input, which is a sit puff tube that they have in like on like wheelchairs. And that, so blowing into it is gas and sucking into it is brake. It took a while to get to that solution, right? We had to do a lot of iterations, but Sam Schmidt is his name, former IndyCar driver. He really felt comfortable with that setup and that kind of input device that's different from what we're used to, and really took it on. And like you said, he raced up Pikes Peak, which is more of a time trial, right? Not a traditional race against other people. Yep. Where someone like perhaps you and I would drive it up in like 40, 45 minutes. He was able to do it in about 14 minutes.
Where that's astonishing.
The other competitors, call it motorcycle or there's different classes, you know, yep. in the 9 to 12 second. Minute range.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, that's incredible. I mean, I think for folks not familiar with Pikes Peak, I think one good analogy I've often used is besides the fact that it is literally the tallest paved road or tallest accessible road in the US or North America, I believe.
I think so.
Yeah, it's sort of a great metric here on this side of the globe, similar, say, to what we've got on the other side in Germany at the Nürburgring, right? It's a really good sort of level playing field set of metrics for track times
times. No. I mean, you know, after he made it to the top, he said, "That was great. I'm glad I did it. Box checked. I don't know if I'd ever do it again because it's pretty."
I can imagine. Yeah. I've seen some pretty harrowing videos of that thing.
Yeah. Huh,
super cool. All right. Well, good. So this then kind of is a perfect segue, as I hoped it might be, to kind of what's going on now with IndyCar, which I had no idea. So
yeah,
definitely very interested.
This is so cool. I'm just thrilled to be a part of this. So, through, I guess, you know, my network and connections, previous, especially with that Corvette project, I was introduced to a group called Energy Systems Network. I just use their acronym ESN. And anyway, they're organizing this project, where it's a collegiate competition for an Indy Lights vehicle to race autonomously this October, October 23rd, to be exact. So what we're doing today is we're working with Clemson University, ourselves, and probably, you know, a handful of other sponsors, working with them to build this first prototype. So what we're going to do is, of course, we'll have our drive-by-wire system at the core. We'll have other people's components for your radar, LIDAR, you know, compute, all that stuff kind of defined. We're defining the system architecture. And then once that has been done, which we're right about to finish, we will then copy-paste that to build the rest of the vehicles for these collegiate teams. There's something like 30 different universities participating. And within those 30 universities, they are all teaming up together to form their own teams, right? To race in this competition. And it's actually, I think, $1 million prize for the first place team. And so I guess what that means is we're building this autonomous Indy Lights vehicle. And then the universities will be doing their own software development, which they have been doing in parallel and doing simulated races to control the vehicle at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Wow. All right. So just to take this is super cool. I mean, to take a step back though, just to understand. So Indy Lights, if I understand correctly, is sort of the IndyCar equivalent to Formula 2 on the way to Formula 1, I suppose?
I would say that, yeah.
Like an analogy? Okay. And the point is that this is sort of a, shall we say, an offshoot of that where, I mean, obviously this is ordinarily a human-driven thing, obviously. But in this case, there's like this sort of offshoot now, which is introducing an autonomous racing series of sorts.
I wouldn't say a series. This is going to be a one-off at the moment, but who knows where it's going to go.
Yeah, I guess I was getting ahead of myself. it's possible. Yeah. All right. Wow. This is very cool.
Really exciting. And I mean, this is perfect for us and other sponsors to prove out the technology going from the track to production, increasing performance and safety, right? For autonomous vehicles and the iconic, you know, Indianapolis Motor Speedway. How exciting is that to do it there?
Yeah, seriously. Wow. Yeah. And is this going to be the full oval or the inner road circuit as well, or what?
We're going to start with an oval. Mm-hmm. Let's try to keep it, you know,
right,
as simple as we can to begin with. But I imagine it would evolve into a road course.
Yeah. And so just to be clear, this is strictly autonomous, or is there going to be a teleops component as well?
Strictly autonomous.
Very cool.
Wow. Yeah. First of its kind, at least with this type of chassis. So pretty excited to see it.
Yeah. And what a neat bit of symmetry with car development generally, right? I mean, auto racing has always trickled down all sorts of great tech for consumer vehicles. So obviously it would make sense to have that sort of a thing here for AVs and indeed even EVs. Oh yeah. Actually, did you already say this? Are these necessarily going to be electric vehicles? I'm assuming
they're not.
They're not. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the idea is what? So you sort of fine tune the various technology solutions that you've developed. And then eventually the plan is, I'm assuming to kind of branch these out into consumer vehicles eventually, or what?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, you know, part of our Schaeffler's development efforts is to, you know, figure out a production ready solution for steer by wire. And what we learn from this project and all this development will certainly be a key, you know, a lot of good information and data to input into that design and development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how much of the development involves, say, issues surrounding connectivity as opposed to the actual steering mechanism? So one of the questions that's often asked for anything involving any sort of connected electric, autonomous, or teleopt car is always the issue of connectivity. Is that something which is being tackled as well on board the vehicle, or frankly off it, cloud-based?
That is being tackled. Of course, that's not our core competency. But definitely that's a big piece of it. Not only connectivity for the race itself, right? So you're constantly monitoring these vehicles as they go around the track, which is a challenge, but also collecting the data, analyzing the data and understanding or learning from that data. And then how does that transfer into, you know, something production worthy? And not to mention the other piece, which is security, right? I can't imagine having something like this as a series or even just a one-off and being vulnerable to, you know, hackers trying to get in and start to manipulate the cars. You wouldn't want that. So we've got to be very aware and cognizant of that as well.
So I feel like drive-by-wire as a general technology is something we've kind of heard of for a long time though, right? I mean, it seems like it's taken forever to kind of get to market in any meaningful form, or am I completely missing something here? Right. Because I feel like I remember years ago, I want to say maybe, I don't even know who it was, honestly. This was like a long time ago, there was discussions about moving away, say, from a traditional steering rack, a mechanical steering rack, even braking systems too, just moving everything to drive or brake by wire. But I don't think those ever actually came to market though. Is it largely regulatory or is it technical or what?
It's more subtle. It's not just like, hey, here it is on your Volkswagen that you bought, right? It's in different applications. Like if you look at like kind of last mile delivery, mm-hmm. those type of vehicles, that's where drive-by-wire and stuff you're going to see more often, mm-hmm. right? You'll see even like public transit where, you know, you're just picking people up and dropping people off on a right. you know, geo-fenced area. So it's out there. It's just not necessarily as common to passenger vehicles as you would think. And
although I'd imagine there's an energy efficiency boost as well, right? So presumably with electric cars, it'll be a very necessary thing to have, I would imagine.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, even though it's not at the forefront at the moment, there's still so much, I guess there's so many prototypes and other things out there that are using it today that we're learning from and gathering information from to get to where we need to be right down the road. It's coming.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So the idea though, just so you, it's all sorts of different hardware technologies that are being tested on these cars, right? And so your focus then mm-hmm. is strictly on the driving components, whereas the various sensors, radar, LiDAR, et cetera, you don't have any input on that.
Correct.
You're just handling the steering components, right? Okay. And so then this data, I mean, presumably could be used for all sorts of, I don't want to dive too deep into what you might necessarily be using the data for eventually, frankly, probably beyond the scope of this chat, but I can imagine there's a lot of really valuable data that would be worth a lot to folks to learn from, frankly.
Yes, I think so too. And
even
to date, there's a lot of learnings that we've gathered, and we can only get better, I guess, right, from here. And if you don't push the boundaries, then you won't get better. You won't learn. And so this is a great example of us doing that.
So I know I've been telling you quite a bit about the information for the last few episodes, and with good reason. One of the things I think I should explain to you is what's so great about their articles, about their coverage of tech news generally. You're not going to find this kind of stuff anywhere else. For, you know, how you often see headlines from like all the other big tech journals. They basically recycle each other's stories. This is what I mean when I say they're kind of just tech tabloids, right? The information, though, the stories you get, the stuff you read on their website, the newsletters they send you, these are things you're not going to find anywhere else. So, you know, when you get that newsletter in your inbox, you're actually genuinely excited because it's stuff you've just not heard of before or you've not read. Or even if it is something you're kind of familiar with, it's a totally different spin with a completely different sort of deep dive look. Anyway, look, just give them a try. I promise you'll thank me later. And to get started, I'm hooking you up with 75% off your first month. Just head on over to theinformation.com/hoag. Again, that's theinformation.com/HOAG. You know, this reminds me of back in the day. I think we probably talked about this last time. I don't know. But it reminds me of back in the day when Airbus first demonstrated their fly-by-wire systems, you know, to the world. I think they pulled it first from military aircraft, I think for the A300, I guess it was called. I remember one of the big questions was regulators, for example, didn't know what to make of it. And so they said, well, look, let's just see if it's at least as competent as, you know, Boeing's mechanical systems. And that's kind of the benchmark we're going to go with. I wonder, do you think there's going to be a similar sort of, because I feel that's kind of how things are going with AV generally, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, for better or worse, obviously things are kind of up in the air in every sense, right? And I think that's probably the way to go here as well, right? Sort of see what works, figure out benchmarks based on literally whatever is state of the art and does the best. And at the end of the day, I'm sure you'll agree, consumers should never even need to care either way as long as the thing works. I mean, except for people, you know, like probably you and me who actually care about this stuff, most passengers on airplanes probably don't care or even know whether they're on a Boeing or an Airbus, right?
Right, right. If we go back to Sam Schmidt and driving this Corvette, not only did he do Pikes Peak, he got the first of its kind a semi-autonomous vehicle license from the state of Nevada.
Really?
And I bring it up because while the vehicle is I guess cutting edge, but certainly unique, right? One of its kind. Nevada is really pushing the rules and regulatory aspect, right? Like let's enable the development of these AVs. Let's not be a roadblock, right, to them. And I, at least in my experience with them, they're really at the forefront trying to push that envelope. And I think that's what we need to do instead of, you know, all these, what we know from the past and today, these rules and regulations won't fit these AVs in the future. So why not be open, right, to evolving those? And I think Nevada's really taken a step forward in doing
it. Yeah, totally agreed. I mean, Nevada, California, obviously, I guess Arizona is doing pretty well, right? Actually, this reminds me of a funny thing I was just talking about the other day. Did you hear, sort of as an aside, I guess Pennsylvania has just declared that legally delivery bots on sidewalks are now pedestrians.
No way.
I mean, that's kind of cool, right? Now, if only they looked like R2 or something, they'd be set to go.
That'd be great.
It's just awesome. Yeah.
Things like that. That's what we need. It's crazy. It's scary, but it's exciting.
Yeah. I mean, but to your point, that's part of the problem, right? There's so much sort of literally old school legacy stuff still on the books that you end up with these ridiculously anachronistic laws that effectively preclude anything vastly better and safer. For instance, I remember learning a few years ago now, actually, that, so you know how I think all vehicles in Europe, for example, if you slam on the brakes, they flash the brake lights. You know, my dad taught me to do this with the hazard lights. He said, hey, look, if you're in an emergency stop situation, train your muscle memory to quickly push your emergency lights on, right? You too, right? Exactly. Yeah. See? Yeah. And so, but anyway, we're not allowed to have those on our cars because nobody knows. or similarly, like, you know, a sequential turn signals or headlights that automatically occlude oncoming traffic, things like that. It's just bizarre.
Yes, it is. And the challenge I think we have, you know, as well as the rest of the world, but certainly the US, every state and every county and every whatever, right, has their own definition of what things should look like. And it's a challenge to, you know, make something standardized.
Did you hear about recently the the DOT or NHTSA released the final rule on their AV sort of framework that they're coming out with, in which they kind of started to sort of redefine various things to allow for a driverless future?
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's another thing that Scheffler is involved with. The US DOT put out a challenge, essentially asking, you know, academia, industry, and anyone else, how do we make public transit more accessible? So there's not necessarily an autonomous element to it, but it's certainly a component. And it's like, how what we have today doesn't work with people with mobility issues or people with sight or hearing or whatever it is. And so how do you solve this problem? And actually, Scheffler with Purdue University, we just made it through the first phase, and we were awarded a grant to build a prototype that would show off some of our capabilities and how you make this vehicle, these public transit vehicles, more accessible. And so I know you were going on that.
This is super cool though. But what does more accessible mean in this case?
So it's more like it's still being defined, but what I'm imagining it is like you want an Uber, right? Or some sort of rideshare device. You have an app and you got a profile. Okay, I'm in this type of wheelchair. I need to get from A to B. How do I do so? And so this vehicle would not only know your information, pull up to the right spot, know where to pull up so the ramp can deploy. And then you can actually interact with the vehicle via your phone or whatever device you typically use, right? Depending on your level of disability. And so we're trying to make, to show a concept that could be production worthy for the future.
A concept of an app or a whole service?
Whole service. Well,
wow.
A lot of the hardware, right, has to go into it. Right. Like, what would the vehicle look like? We have to have a smart ramp deployment. And if it's a wheelchair user, how do they get secured into the vehicle in more of an automated way? So I guess, how do you automate some of that interaction with people with with disabilities? And so we just found out at the beginning of the year, we got that grant. And so super excited to work on that. And what Scheffler is bringing to the table is more of the secondary function control. So you think of primary, steering, gas, and brake. But we also have technology to control secondary functions. If you think of a passenger vehicle, you know, blinkers, horn, wipers, that kind of stuff. But if this is a public transit vehicle, then you would think more like, what's the status of my trip? Or maybe I want to adjust the HVAC, or maybe I want to hear the radio. Of course, maybe you want to be in control of when the ramp deploys. So things like that is what we're working on.
And the timing of this is pretty perfect, I think, with respect to everything still ongoing with COVID, right? I mean, right. I guess there's a lot of mixed, and I'm glad to hear you say, right, because I feel like there's a lot of mixed opinions on this. I mean, I have kind of went on the record, for better or worse, many times since COVID started, saying that I thought this would be an awesome time for all things AV. Like, what better opportunity to test, not just because there's less traffic generally, but also because it totally validates the need for transporting people around more safely. I mean, as I often said, the future is kind of here. We're just not ready for it. Meaning, it would have been really nice for a lot of folks if they could just summon a driverless car to get from A to B. I mean, from a safety point of view, right?
I'm hoping, and you know, I don't know this for sure, but I'm hoping that throughout this pandemic, that it's almost accelerated some of that development, right? And whether the adoption is one issue, right? But regardless, I feel like I'm hoping it will have progressed us further than if we hadn't been through the pandemic.
Yeah. I mean, so one of the things we've seen a lot of is more testing in sort of large, so we say privately owned communities, whether it's retirement communities, office parks, et cetera. And I've often suggested that the next obvious step, actually, I would have said the first step, is sort of dedicated roads and lanes in cities, you know, taking over bus, you know, disused bus lanes, essentially, right? So at least speaking with respect to San Francisco, there's such a reduction in bus traffic, you know, and we've got these dedicated bus lanes. Why not start doing this sort of deployment there? Because you're right, this is just like perfect time to do this.
Yes. Yep. And like, you know, you were asking, I guess, is autonomy out there? Is drive-by-wire out there, or is it not? I mean, there's a lot of examples out there, and I think Waymo is a good one too. I mean, they're giving away, you know, rides, hundreds of rides per week without a driver, and that's, I mean, that's autonomy right there, out on public streets. So.
Yeah, no, totally. Well, hey, since you're not shying away from discussing other companies, I have to ask the rather large elephant in the room.
Okay.
Do you want to offer any thoughts on what Tesla have been up to with respect to the full self-driving beta fiasco? It's okay for you to say no. I had to put you on the spot for a second.
No, yeah, it's okay if you did. To be honest, I would say no. No comment there.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, here's the thing, right? I mean, to the point of your, you know, the previous comments, I mean, one of the things that we've noticed too is that there's a big element of consumer acceptance. And I think we may have chatted this in the past. I don't know. You know, it's not like other technologies, I feel, where, I mean, as silly as it sounds, there was no sort of debate, would people accept, I don't know, a touchscreen phone?
Yeah.
Or would they accept, I don't know, a different type of boat, or I don't know what, but here, this notion of, hey, are you willing to be driven by a computer? This seems to really kind of rub people the wrong way.
Yeah.
A lot.
Well, and I think people jump to that so quickly, like that is the future, but it's kind of far out, right? Driving people around. You're seeing robots now on the streets delivering goods. That's one thing. No one's going to die from that, I don't think. But then, like, think of the example of, like, of course, parents aren't going to put their kids on a bus that's autonomous. That seems a little crazy and a little bit aggressive at the moment, right? But what if the bus driver does his job, he picks up the kids and drops them off, and then for maintenance and cleaning and whatever, that part is automated, right? And then you have the autonomous step in, and you don't have to pay for the labor for someone else to do that. Like, that's what I'm saying. There's pockets that people don't really look at or are aware of, where autonomy can really has a place, and that we can use that experience, right, and data to help us further progress to get to the point where we can start putting people in these autonomous vehicles.
So that's a super good point. I mean, it sounds obvious when it's spelled out, but it needs to be spelled out because it's missed a lot. You know, one of the similar points people often raise is the issue of truck driving, right? And people say, oh, autonomous vehicles are going to put so many drivers out of work, which, of course, this is a seriously very real problem that needs to be addressed and worked around. Mm-hmm. But you're right. It's, first of all, it's going to take a while.
Yes.
Probably less of a while than all the other vehicles on the road, but it is going to take a little while. Second of all, you're totally right that there's going to be a lot of interim type work for them to do.
Yes.
The maintenance example you gave is awesome. And third of all, there's a very real possibility that part of that interim transition period is going to be largely teleops. I mean, wouldn't it be great for, my understanding is that a truck driver's life is a brutally hard, long, and frankly, a lonely one. And to the extent that they could spend more time at home with their families doing this remotely, that just seems like a win all around for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's more sharing that information or sharing that knowledge with the greater, you know, population. Like, it's not just an AV as you would imagine it, fully autonomous, driving you from A to B. There's other components of it and iterations that need to happen. Where then, you know, throughout that evolution, I think adoption will start to increase.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it is essentially just a sort of a spectrum of improvement. Eventually, I mean, we had adaptive cruise control, then lane keep assist, and one thing leads to the next. That's why I find it somewhat bizarre when certain companies, I mean, take Mercedes, for example, they recently announced they're going to stop doing full passenger AV development and leave it only for commercial trucks through the Daimler division, right? And I just thought, well, that's sort of bizarre. So they're just going to keep iteratively improving lane keep assist and adaptive cruise control and emergency braking. Well, at what point does that get good enough where it's effectively, say, level 3 or level 4? Like, how do you just draw a bright line rule and say, nope, we're not going to improve any further? That's it. It's weird to me.
And I think, I guess maybe what I'm saying is education is important, so that people feel more comfortable with what's happening and where the future is going. I mean, I remember my dad teaching me, you know, you've got to pump the brakes if you're starting to slide on snow so you don't lock them up. And now you've got ABS. I mean, maybe not apples to oranges, but it's still an example of technology that will start to help us and make us safer. And that's just that's the goal, right?
Yeah. So that's an excellent analogy, actually. I like that a lot. And actually to kind of go even deeper on that analogy, that is even the additional detail where you could even sort of muscle train your memory to so-called threshold break, which will even be better than the ABS. I mean, there's so many different layers of education around these various systems. You know, it reminds me too of a tragic set of stories I've heard insofar as I've actually spoken with people who refuse to wear seatbelts because they're convinced that they're more dangerous because you get trapped in the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And talk about the need for education. I mean, sure, I'm guessing that might have been the case with much older, you know, coffin-like vehicles back in the day. I suppose that was a legitimate risk. But to draw that connection to modern vehicles, it is a fundamental lack of education. You're totally right.
Yes, absolutely. Good point.
But there's also a cultural element, right? I mean, cars are kind of unique in the sense that they're, on the one hand, the second most expensive thing that most people buy or lease or otherwise put up money to get. They're especially bizarre because we don't actually use them that much, right? Aren't they sitting essentially dormant for 98% of the time? And thirdly, even most weirdly, we have such emotional bonds to them. I mean, I'm certainly guilty of this. And so there's sort of all these layers of disconnect that have to occur where literally at a almost societal fabric kind of level, we change that perception of cars. And I've often suggested, I'm curious what you think, that that's not really going to go away until, and I say this overly simplistically to make a point, but I think that may not go away until you literally delete the steering wheel.
Well, you're probably right. I mean, I was just talking to one of my colleagues earlier today. Like, we were talking about autonomous vehicles, and especially in the public transit area. And, you know, he's like, well, you know, think about the older generations, and they can't necessarily drive safely, but they need to get somewhere. It's perfect for them. I said, yes. But also think about like the Gen Zers or the younger guys that they don't even care if they have a driver's license. They, you know, they're connected virtually and they don't really care. But if they do need to get somewhere, they don't want to drive. They just want something to take care of it for them. And so, you know, but you and I have the mindset, and I believe that we were brought up like, that's your rite of passage. That's your independence. Better get your license. You get a car. Every car I've owned, I name it. Like, I'm definitely attached to my vehicle.
That's awesome.
but at the same time, of course, there are people that just don't care to drive, and that's okay too.
Yeah. To be fair though, because I feel like a lot of folks will comment back at me if I don't address this point. I agree completely, but isn't this somewhat an urban centric truth? In other words, you're right that most folks, especially below a certain age, would, you know, they couldn't care less about getting their license or certainly driving generally, but certainly everybody not living in urban environments, this isn't just a thing they desire, but in fact, a legitimate thing they need, especially here in the US more than anywhere else, right?
No, that's a good point. Yeah.
Which then raises the somewhat bizarre, not really a paradox, but I guess added layer of complexity, which is, although it seems vastly easier to fast track AVs generally in more suburban areas, I mean, after all, Waymo is effectively doing this, right? In Chandler, I guess. One could argue there's a much greater need for AVs though in denser urban cores, not just from a safety point of view, but from a, well, to your point, from a, the fact that nobody wants to drive anyway. I once made the horrible mistake of renting a car in Boston. And then I made an even stupider mistake doing it a second time. I love Boston, but don't ever rent a car and drive there. It's just, it's completely, completely just a waste of time.
Terrible. Especially in Cambridge. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. And don't ever drive or think about parking in San Francisco because it will get broken into. So.
Right.
So it's a weird, it is kind of a paradox though, right?
It is. But I think we're also trying to shed light that it's not just black and white. It's not you're driving yourself or it's autonomous. There's so much in between.
Right.
And different environments, different applications. So yeah, it's complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, so I know you said you're not really focused on the teleops section, or I should say component of sort of any of this discussion really, but I'm just kind of curious as an aside, it's been suggested that, you know, teleops is often to your point about interim technologies, I think we can agree that it's certainly a good interim backup technology, right? And indeed it's effectively required in certain use cases, right? Yeah. But isn't it a bit counterproductive if for teleops to be, actually, hang on, I don't want to lead this question. Let me just ask you, do you think it makes sense for teleops to be wholly disconnected from the essence of the various levels of autonomy so that it's not effectively held back by regulatory approval? It's effectively a different technology for safety, like ABS or airbags or whatever. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a time and place for the teleops. I don't think it should be a fallback for safety necessarily.
Interesting.
Or a requirement going forward. Now, it just depends. I mean, like, I guess going back to our space drive and drive by wire, we're a fail safe operational system. And so that means even if something goes down in our system, we've got redundancies built in place where the vehicle can still perform what it needs to do or limp aside to get it to safety. There doesn't need to be human intervention.
Hang on, that's super cool. Really? So it'll automatically, for instance, pull over and, okay.
Well, it depends what input device you've got, right?
Well, okay, right.
Telling it what to do, but you still have that connection. And I think depending on the application, relying on human intervention, whether it's remote or in the car, might hinder us from progressing, right? To make these autonomous vehicles. But at the same time, if your application is maybe on a fixed route, all you've got to do is, you know, X, Y, and Z tasks, and something goes down and you need to, I don't know, reprogram or reroute it, then sure, maybe a human needs to be part of that or monitor it or whatever. But I think the idea should be, don't let it, you know, have that redundancy so that you, even if, like, okay, for example, if you've got a passenger in a vehicle that's taking you from A to B, something fails, they shouldn't know about it at all. The vehicle should still operate as normal, get to where you need to go, and then do the maintenance.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So maybe I went down a tangent, but those are kind of my thoughts on that.
No, that's awesome. I was even debating whether to go in that direction at all, but it's something that turns up a lot. And I just think it's important to at least consider separating the discussion from actual AV tech versus teleops, which, as you suggested, and I guess sort of disagree with, it sounds like it shouldn't be a necessary backup layer.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Huh. So what's next? So Indy Lights, you guys are doing, you know, participating in this competition of sorts. And by the way, speaking of which, is there a particular website you want to share or any sort of content folks can go to check out to learn more about what you guys are doing?
Yeah, it's literally just IndyAutonomousChallenge.com.
I'm doing that now.
Yeah, do it. There's so much info on there and content and who's involved and timelines and the teams.
Could I not know about this? This is super cool. Wow.
Well, I'm glad I could shed some light on it.
This is very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, neat. Oh, I see which. Okay. So let's see the next. Okay. Right. Here's the tree of the upcoming events, I guess. I see.
Yeah. Okay, and even looking at like the sponsors, there's some big names.
There really are, actually. And there's Schaeffler. What do you know?
There you go. So what's very cool is that just to close on that topic, we're building these vehicles now for the teams. The teams have to prove themselves through a simulated race near the Indianapolis 500 in May. And the qualifiers of that simulated race will be handed keys, air quotes, to their vehicle. And, you know, we don't want to give these vehicles out to teams and then have them crash. So they got to prove themselves
in the
simulation round. So the Indy 500 will be a big event for the Indy Autonomous Challenge too.
Huh. So actually, I'm curious. So how does the simulation work? Is it literally, is it basically a coordinate perfect replica of the track then this is just run in real time?
Yep. And ANSYS is a big sponsor of that piece, right? They're using their simulation tools and software to do so. But then cool. You know, all that development and work will be then translated into the vehicle itself for live testing and everything, and qualifying leading up to the race in October.
Well, that's very cool. You know, I would love to kind of keep up to date on this. So please feel free to share with me anything, you know, and if there's any way to watch it or at least, you know, even indirectly, I'd certainly love to see how that goes. That's very neat.
I'll get you some tickets.
Well, thanks. Well, awesome, Noelle. This has been pretty great. I'm glad we finally had a chance to sync up and have this chat. Certainly, you're always welcome back for a future conversation and maybe a recap, see how this whole race went, honestly. And you know, meanwhile,
it was very good to chat with you and good to catch up, and I appreciate, you know, you taking the time, and really good content, and I'm looking forward to staying in touch for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, please do. Well, thanks very much, take care, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mark.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, well, that is a wrap for today, and indeed this week. Again, if you want to learn more about the Indy Autonomous Challenge, you can head on over to IndyAutonomousChallenge.com. For more on the U.S. DOT Inclusive Design Challenge, head over to transportation.gov/accessibility/inclusive design. And to learn more about the SAM Car Project, that incredible Pikes Peak Hill Climb race car that Noelle and her team outfitted with a drive-by-wire system for a quadriplegic race car driver, you can learn more over at arrow.com. All right, well, a huge thank you again to Noelle for joining me today. Thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. I'll see you back here next week. Take care. Bye-bye.